Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 282, recorded on December 27th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by Yamaha, and I'll be talking about their AG USB audio mixers later on in the show. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, and I'm glad I'm actually here.
Cold is Colorado there.
Well, now that I'm back in Boulder, it's warmed up to a balmy 13 degrees. But when I was in Estes Park, like overnight last night, the local thermometers were registering 20 below.
Celsius, right? Surely you're talking Celsius.
We're talking Fahrenheit. And we were so excited when we hit zero today. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been like
cold here too.
Low 40s.
Super
cold.
I don't know how you guys are surviving.
I don't know either.
It's cold.
Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, how's it going?
Good. All right. I'm nervous.
It'll be okay.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
All kinds of problems for plugging
this
show.
If I was able to overcome technology to get back to Boulder so that we could record, I don't think you're going to have any trouble.
Well, I wouldn't say it was technology. It was like more like chemistry.
Physics.
Yeah.
It was chemistry. It was physics. And
yeah, frozen fuel line.
The laws of thermodynamics.
Yeah.
Yes, but with some help from science.
Thank you, science.
And a little bit of extra chemistry, I was able to get my car going.
Yay.
There I am.
So did you guys catch the puff piece on Charlie Rose about Apple?
I haven't watched it. I still haven't watched it yet, unfortunately.
I watched some pieces. It was pretty fun. There's you get to see Johnny Ive's fancy lab. It really kind of looks like an Apple store.
Yeah.
Which makes me think they might have just gone to an Apple store and said it was his lab.
I believe the tables that are in the Apple stores were modeled actually after the design lab tables.
Yeah, that's the story
I've always been told. So that's surprising.
Yes. And most of the stuff there was completely covered
in black cloths.
Yeah, I mean, they must own stock in these black cloth making companies because they have a lot of them.
My biggest disappointment when seeing all those black cloths is that they didn't try and do something funny, like have an intern lay on a table. They put the black cloth over him. And so as the camera's panning around, it's obvious there's a body covered on one of the tables. What a missed opportunity.
That would have been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But he went easy on the questions, right? That's the deal.
Of course he did.
He didn't hard-nose the questions.
No. Apple let him in, and in exchange, he didn't ask any hard questions.
They behaved themselves.
Yeah.
As Apple makes everybody do if they want those sorts of deals, that sort of access.
Totally. One of the cool things I liked when he was in the design lab, Johnny showed Charlie Rose that when they were trying to determine the new sizing for the phones for the 6 and the 6 Plus, he claims that it came down to just making a whole range of sizes and figuring out which one just felt best.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is a good way to go about it.
They have their whole fab lab there, you know, they can just like run stuff off.
They do have the fab lab, yeah. Bob blah blah's fab lab.
I'm clearly easy to entertain.
That's good. That's why we have you here. So that was cool. One other neat detail was that there's, I guess there are 800 engineers working on the iPhone camera at Apple.
Holy crud.
Yeah. Yeah, they brought Charlie Rose into the camera test lab, and it's basically an area where they can simulate any kind of light, interior or exterior, and take sample photos and calibrate and come up with better camera tech. But yeah, he did say there are 800 people at Apple working on
camera. You know, you hear that kind of figure, and then the camera suddenly becomes a lot less impressive. Like, shouldn't it be way better than it actually is if they've got 800 people working on it?
Maybe. Well, one thing that blew me away is
not to put down Apple's camera engineers, which I'm sure
they're not full time people either
in their field. Absolutely, and it's amazing. But you think about that much manpower, and you're like, wow, it should be like 3D holographic images already.
But it's, right.
Well, that's coming. That's the next iPhone.
My expectations just went way up for the camera.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm expecting holographic. I'm also expecting Blade Runner technology so that I can zoom in, go around the corner, and look in the other room.
You know, totally tangential to that, I was watching a TED Talk of I think it was maybe some kind of physicist working at MIT, and he was doing ultra-high frame rate photography, where he could do cool things like watch a pulse of light very slowly move through a Coke bottle.
I saw that is so awesome.
And it got to the point, so the tech is so cool that you can point a camera, he said, at a piece of fruit. I didn't fully understand this part, but you can point it at a piece of fruit and tell whether it's ripe because it can see through the piece of fruit, and I would imagine do some kind of a spectroscopy on it. But even cooler is they can see around corners.
Right, because the light bounces around a corner and is coming back at different times.
Yeah, and so if you can sample...
the reflection.
Yeah, and if you can sample it fast enough, you can actually make a reliable interpolation of what is around the corner.
Which is really awesome.
Yeah, so that's coming in the next iPhone.
Sweet.
All right, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And if Apple doesn't do that, clearly the company is doomed to failure.
Plus precognitive images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will take the picture before you knew you want to take the picture.
Oh, man, that'll be awesome. I can just start flicking through the photos camera roll.
That you've already taken.
To see what pictures.
To see what your plans are for next Saturday.
It's going to be awesome.
Like, what am I going to do next? Oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, cool. I thought it was cool. They were talking about how it's just, the camera is suspended by four cables that are less than a human hair's width. And it made me wonder how it doesn't break.
Well, they did, remember?
Did it?
Yeah.
That,
you don't know about the half moon issue?
Yeah, that's why I ended up with the new iPhone.
No, tell me more.
All right, so the camera, once it's mounted, there were a bunch where the camera ended up shifting,
yeah,
either flipped down or off to the side. And so if you looked at the lens point from the outside, you'd see this little silver crescent. Sort of like a little crescent moon. And that's because your camera had shifted over. And when you take photos, you get this kind of black artifact, blurry artifact on one side of your image.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when I took my iPhone in and said, hey, here's the problem I'm having. Look at the camera. And at first they're like, oh, no, that's how it is. And don't worry, it's fine. I'm like, no, let's look at some of the photos. And no, it's not fine. Let's look at the floor models. And then the next thing I know, they're handing me a new iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. The lenses were slipping out of some units.
Huh. So, yeah, I guess it's because of those thin little wires. Yeah, so go check out the 60 Minutes special. It's a two-part thingy. They also show... they went into the...
Is it available for streaming now?
You have to go, I couldn't get it to really go to my Apple TV. The best way to do it is click the link in the show notes, and there are two, there are links to both parts, I believe.
On CBS's website.
On CBS's website, so you'll have to suffer through some ads, but, and you know, whatever.
Flash.
Yeah, Flash, I believe. The, oh, they went to the spaceship. The under construction spaceship, and they were there for them to put the first enormous piece of curved glass into it.
Cool.
Which is pretty awesome.
It is pretty cool. And then they, I love the part where it kind of turned into an episode of Top Gear suddenly, where they were like, yeah, we're going to show you Mount Apple. And they all hopped into like rugged Jeeps. Like Tim Cook is driving this rugged Jeep, and they drive up to the top of the ever growing mountain of dirt that they have beside the spaceship.
I wonder if it's really just a mountain of dirt, or if what they're doing is building this memorial mound that has a tomb underneath, and that's where Steve Jobs lives.
Oh God, I want that. I would love that. That would be great. I think everybody would enjoy that. They would go see the Steve Jobs pyramid.
Yeah.
It wouldn't clash with the like very naturalistic sort of thing that he was going for at the campus.
Well, it would have sleek lines.
Oh, very true. Yeah. Yeah, you should, if you haven't already checked out the, there are a lot of really cool videos of the campus from drones. You get to see the, I think we already talked about it. The underground theater they have with giant wings. I was kind of surprised with how big the, you know, the wings of the stage were. It looked like they were maybe setting something up where they could actually host performances for the employees or something. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see here. What do you guys think about T-Mobile? So they have the Binge On service where you get free streaming. It doesn't hit your data bucket.
Because they re-encode it.
So they bring it down. If you turn it on, then they bring it down to a 480p on the T-Mobile partners, which include Netflix, HBO, Hulu.
It's YouTube that's pissed.
YouTube is not included in this list. They're not a partner. However, they are also getting their data crunched down to 480p.
They're not happy about it.
No. I don't blame them.
Well, it kind of raises some questions about net neutrality and that sort of thing. And
well,
the way that
if the customers opted in for that, though, that's a different thing, because I could go on YouTube and also just crank down the number right on the little settings. I could say I just want the 480p one. So if I, as a consumer, am choosing to opt for that, that doesn't seem to me to fall under the whole net neutrality thing. Now, if they're doing that blanket across the board, even for customers who haven't opted in for this, you know, it doesn't count
the
against your data
on, yeah,
thing, then that's a separate issue. But if it's
not clear.
Yeah, sorry.
I was just saying it's not clear. I've seen conflicting reports at this point whether some people say that even if you have Binge On turned off,
they're throttling.
Yeah, but that may be incorrect. It should be that
if that is what's going on, then that is a problem. If it's the kind of thing where I've set a setting on my phone to say, look, I want to get, you know, the lower bit rate so it doesn't count as much against my data or doesn't count against my data at all, then I just see that as a customer choice. So, and those are two distinctly different things. Now, if T-Mobile's running through and just capping, you know, bandwidth from YouTube altogether for everyone, yeah, then that's potentially a problem.
Even if they're not opting into the Binge thing?
Correct. Yeah, if you're not opting in for it, then they shouldn't be messing with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And for what it's worth, I haven't run into this issue at all. I would imagine most people who do actually run into this, they're not even aware of it.
Well, and I've noticed that YouTube even does it dependent upon the size of the video that you have playing. Like, oftentimes I'll be watching something on my Mac and just in the little window, you know, the embed window that someone's got on their site. And if it's in the small embed window and it's under a certain size, it caps out at like 480p.
Yeah.
And it's not, you won't get the HD until you put it up full screen.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. But again, oftentimes I'm like, oh, that looks like really, even in the small window, it's like, that looks like crud. What's going on? And then I realize, oh, it defaulted to 480p, even though I have plenty of bandwidth to play the 720 or the 1080.
Yeah. And that's one thing that YouTube just does by default that people have also pointed out. That's like, why are you complaining about this so much? It kind of already does that.
Yeah, depending upon your window size and yeah. the resolution of your device. So, I mean, is some of that what's going on too? Because T-Mobile, you know, a lot of their customers have lower, you know, cheaper phones that maybe have lower res displays. And so it's just like YouTube defaulting itself to like 480p.
Could be. Yeah.
A lot of finger pointing going on with this bandwidth stuff.
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem is that people have a sense of entitlement. And I'm not saying wanting to have control over the quality of a video streaming to you is in a sense of entitlement. You know, it's a totally reasonable thing. But I think people don't understand a lot of what happens with the technologies behind the scenes. And they just think they deserve or are owed something. Or when they hear something isn't what they think it is or what they think they have, they just flip.
Yeah.
The weirder one on this one is I don't understand what Google's... I mean, are they concerned that customers are... Is the concern customers are complaining to Google that, hey, your videos look terrible on my T-Mobile device?
Are you kidding me? You think that... You think anybody is writing to Google at all about any sort of problem?
See what I'm saying? So why would Google even care then? If they're not getting complaints, or if it's not if it's some sort of quality issue, then I understand. If they're saying, "Look, you're delivering our product to your customers at a subpar quality level from our perspective."
Yeah,
I would imagine that's what they're upset about. You're giving them less than the experience that we're trying to deliver.
Yeah,
but if that's not the case, then I don't even know what the problem would be. Like, who cares? It's not that, right?
Yeah. Alphabet seems to care.
What else would they care about?
Ads.
But they're not taking the ads out.
I know.
Right? And the ads
you
are
know, perhaps
low
it, maybe they're
anyway.
No, the ads in my experience are always high quality, louder, and always work better than anything that you're actually trying to watch.
Isn't that just annoying as crap?
I'm glad I'm not the only one. Yeah, ads always work. So you sit through 3 minutes of ads and then the content says error.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's what they're upset about. Maybe the ad providers are like, you know, my ad looks like crap on this T-Mobile phone.
That would do it.
That would do it. Yeah. Well, so as far as we know, turn off Binge On and you should be fine.
I don't know if you're actually fine. I have heard some people saying that even if you turn off the binge thing, you're still getting compressed video.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, then
I don't know.
It's not advertised that way, so perhaps it's some kind of bug in the implementation.
Yeah, then it would be
people just don't know what they're really getting.
Put in a support ticket with T-Mobile is what it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like if you are using Binge On or not using Binge On and you're experiencing this, I'd just send a support request to T-Mobile and be like, hey, I'm not getting good quality.
Yeah, go to the T-Mobile Reddit. They'll help you out.
Are they helpful there?
They are.
I'm hearing more and more good things about T-Mobile, to be honest.
They have a lot of people. They have some people in Reddit, in the T-Mobile Reddit, who hang out there all the time and help with things. But yeah, they're pretty good. The only thing I don't like about T-Mobile is, I'm sure I've said before, is that the old spectrum they have is crap through walls, but they're upgrading. The only issue is you have to get you know, if you're on an iPhone, you have to get the 6S or 6S Plus in order to take advantage of that. So,
well, at this point, could you just use the cellular or Wi-Fi too?
They give you you could use cellular Wi-Fi. That's very true, and which is free. And you could. They also offer free hotspot dongles that you can plug in at work and home. So
cool. Hey.
Yeah, if you're willing to go out of your way a little bit like that.
At least until they get the network upgraded, right?
Yeah, and potentially your phone upgraded.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you need a newer device.
Yeah, but they have good deals on new phones, too, so they're trying. I'm happy with my experience. Let's see. Oh, I enjoyed this story. So you guys, we've probably talked about the whole Android switching and iMessage issue. So the idea being, if you have an iPhone and you were on iMessages and you decided to go to an Android phone, this must be 2012 that we were talking about this. It used to be
we're talking about this.
You were on so you switched to Android, but you had friends who iMessaged with you previously, or perhaps even new contacts. If they tried to contact you from their iPhone, the iMessage server would override the SMS thing because it would assume you still had iMessage. But if you switched, then it wouldn't work. So Apple has since, I believe they've improved the way that they determine if you've gotten rid of your iPhone, but they've also added the special tool to unenroll your number if it doesn't seem to be working properly. So there was a lawsuit that tried to become class action. And it's interesting.
It was just a mess from the beginning.
Yeah. So it was three people, three plaintiffs, I believe a husband, a wife, and a friend of them.
Okay. Yes. But it's even better. So the husband is from a law firm. He starts okay. The lawsuit using his this friend of his and his wife's. And so then he adds his wife in using a phone that the law firm bought. And so they're claiming that they lost all these messages, and they don't have the iPhones in question. So they have no way of proving that they actually didn't get messages.
Yeah.
And the whole thing came across like an ambulance chasing money grab.
Totally.
And so then Judge Lucy Koh, who was overseeing the case and is also the same judge that oversaw the Apple v. Samsung cases.
Yep.
She finally just threw the whole thing out.
Yeah.
So I have an opposite problem that I'm going to need help with.
Okay.
I'm going to throw this out to our audience as well as you guys. So I have a weird thing where now I can send iMessages to my wife's iPhone if I send to her phone number. But if I try to use her iCloud email, and this has happened not just with my wife's phone, I've seen it happen with other phones as well. If I try to send to her iCloud email, which is also registered to iMessage, it defaults to MMS.
Which is really weird because it's using an email and not a phone number.
Yeah, but the phone number is perfectly fine with sending iMessage. So every time you send to her email address, which is an iCloud email registered on iMessages, it sends as Green Bubble MMS.
I'm sure you checked, but does it say on her phone that she wants to receive iMessages from that address?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, isn't that bizarre? It's not just hers. It's happened to me with like two or three other people.
That's annoying.
It's really annoying. And I don't know how to fix it. And I'm like trying to tell them how to fix it. And that's why this, like what you're asking me, the very first thing we checked every single time is, well, is it registered? And I've even tried I had one person even try completely logging out of their iCloud account and like re-logging in.
Yeah. So, if that thing gets screwed up, it's a giant pain in the ass to figure out. There's a lot of signing in and signing out.
That or has a fix, I'm looking for something. I mean, the workaround's fine. We just send to the phone number and then it's fine. So whatever.
What?
It's just annoying though.
You're AT&T, right?
I'm on AT&T. Yeah, I don't know if this is only an AT&T problem or not.
So it's happening when other people try to send from their phones.
Correct. To that person, yes.
You mean from you to that person?
No, when So everybody who I've seen this problem, it's when I try and send a message to somebody that I know has an iMessage account with an iCloud email address.
So maybe it's a problem on your side.
Yeah, I don't know what that would be, though.
Maybe you should try signing out iMessages.
No, because that's ruled out because it hasn't just... Other people have told me about this. Like, someone's been like, I used to send to my friend and it was blue and now it's green. Why is it green?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
Why is it suddenly green?
Because it sucks.
Because it's Apple and it's iMessage.
Yeah, it's voodoo. I don't
know what they're doing.
Okay. Well, we have some more to talk about, but first we should mention our wonderful sponsor, Yamaha, at usa.yamaha.com. The Yamaha AG is a multi-purpose high-resolution mixer and USB audio interface designed for webcasters, podcasters, gamers, mobile musicians, and more. And it's actually the audio interface I'm using right now. The AG03 and AG06 both enable content producers to mix USB audio from the computer as its own channel and eliminate the need to master and monitor complicated software. So I'm not running any audio hijack or anything, which is pretty cool. AG03 is a three-channel mixer and USB audio interface, perfect for small and portable setups. And the AG06 is the six-channel version, great for musicians and pro podcasting. The AG comes equipped with a headset input as well as an input for Phantom Power mics, giving you the option to use either a conventional computer headset or a professional condenser mic. Both mixers feature a 2PC switch that lets users select which inputs get routed to a desktop or iOS device, making it easy to create great sounding podcasts and other internet content. They feature pro quality audio effects, compression, iOS compatibility, and a rugged metal chassis. USB power allows you to operate your AG without an external power supply, keeping your required space to a minimum, which is really awesome. The AG can also be driven by a mobile battery for use on the go. That's also cool. And they're compatible with iOS devices via the Lightning to USB camera adapter. A 3.5mm aux line also lets you connect and listen to mobile devices, tablets, and more. If you're a podcaster, the loopback function consolidates all input channels and playback tracks and routes the mix into your internet streaming software for easy recording or live streaming, no complicated routing software required. And most importantly, the AG's high-quality design enables 192 kilohertz, 24-bit sound that can reproduce even the most subtle nuances of original recordings. AG's sound quality is ideal for capturing the purest reproduction of analog recordings when using it to archive your treasured collection. Both the Yamaha AG03 and AG06 are available from usa.yamaha.com, and you should definitely check them out because this is a nice little mixer, and we thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. And the Beatles, they're on iTunes Music now.
No, and Apple Music.
I'm sorry.
Apple Music.
Yeah, that thing.
And that's an important distinction because
they were on iTunes Music already.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And this is the first time that the Beatles have been available for streaming.
But they're on other streaming services now too.
Yeah, it was all at the same time.
Yeah, Spotify, Apple Music. Are they on Pandora?
No, they're not on Pandora. They're on whatever streaming thing Microsoft has. By the way, did anyone know Microsoft even had a streaming service thing?
No, if someone asked me, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, they probably do.
Is Google Music a streaming thing? Or
I think so.
They're on Google Play.
Yeah.
Google Play.
And they're on
Amazon.
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Doodle.
They're on 9 different services.
Good for them. They're getting the word out about their music.
Isn't there one that's like Dweedle or something weird like that?
Sure.
Yeah. They're on that thing too.
Do you think any of the actual Beatles are like really benefiting or caring or anything about it at this point?
Well, there's only two, right?
Yeah. Ringo and Paul.
My guess is, of course, their families. Yeah,
true. Parents, okay, yeah, but
I don't
mean,
think this is going to have a material impact on their bottom line.
Yeah, it's more like Apple Records rather, being like, yeah, whatever, we can do it.
It's more revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is more revenue. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
More residual income.
Yeah. Let's see. Facebook for iOS is supporting the live photos for 6S, iPhone 6S phones now.
Cool.
So now you can upload those. It'll ask you once, and then after that, I think it's automatic. And then if you see one of those photos, then you can just click the little live button.
Okay, now let's be honest about live photos. Is it more than a parlor trick?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes. And the reason I think so is because I've had the opportunity to use live photos with a 2-year-old. And when you have a little toddler in your life that age, mm-hmm. live photos is suddenly the most awesome thing ever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I get it. It's convenient in certain scenarios. I've used it once or twice, but it's not one thing that's going to, and maybe it's because I don't have a toddler, but I mean, you have pets. I mean, it's kind of the same thing, right? And I've used it with my pets and it's cool. But I don't know that it's like a daily thing that I'm going to be using a lot and posting and sharing a lot. Like, I don't know that is suddenly Facebook getting, you know, overwhelmed, or is everybody moving to posting live photos versus regular photos?
I don't think so, but I think they committed to incorporating support, and so they have. My guess is that you'll start seeing more live photos because of that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I have Nightshade, my cat, my office manager, and I took a couple live photos of her, and I was like, oh yeah, that was clever. But when the toddler thing started happening with live photos, it was like, oh my god, it's, for some people, it's worth buying a phone just to be able to take those photos of their little kid.
I guess. I don't know. It goes back to me, the photography thing we were talking about earlier, with just the engineering of even the cameras and stuff like that. It's like, it takes great photos, and it has these cool little beneficial features, I guess, and that's great. And there's certain scenarios where maybe they come in handy, but it hasn't been a game changer for sure, I don't think.
It's not a game changer, but it sure ups the game. And I totally get that it's really weird that I'm the person coming to the defense of live photos with the argument that I'm using.
Yeah. But
man, it was stunning. Just when I started doing the photos, and I'm like, holy crap, it was worth buying the phone just for this right here.
I think it'd be really helpful. It'd be more game-changing, in my opinion, if you could extract a moment out of that, like almost like you can with the burst mode. You know,
aren't
there's
there
a way to
apps
like
that let you do that?
Scrub. Can you scrub to a certain point and like pull? But yeah, but why wouldn't that be a default thing?
That's a
you know
really
what I mean? Why
question.
Can't I pull an individual frame? Especially in the scenario that you're giving, like with kids, right? Because maybe you didn't get the exact shot. It happened in that, you know, half a second before the one that's actually the still frame of that live photo shot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that seems like kind of an Apple thing. I'm just saying this is the way it is and no more options.
Right.
So.
Right, but I mean, we do know that the package thing, they've done the analysis on it, right? It is just a sequence of JPEGs shot at like 15 frames a second, right?
I believe you are correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'm sure you can pull it into QuickTime and probably extract. I think you can get in there and extract it. I think there's tricks where you could go find the individual frames and probably pull one. But it'd be kind of cool if Apple would let you, you know, frame by frame through it in a mode. Say you go into edit mode and now I can frame by frame. But what happens now, I think when you go into edit mode and you edit it, the minute you save it out, you actually lose the live photo.
Hmm.
Unless you make a copy. I think you can make a copy first, you know, and then edit the copy. But
perhaps.
I don't know. It seems like it could have been taken a lot further. And hopefully maybe they are planning on adding some new features and functionalities on top of current live photos.
Yeah, but this is totally Apple's MO. This is how they do things. They introduce a feature, very basic, just to, you know, show the tech, and then it gets maybe a little bit more advanced as time goes on.
I mostly find it being annoying. For me, the way it's mostly worked out is, oh, crap, I forgot to turn off live photo, and now I have a stupid live photo that I don't want.
Now, the more I'm thinking about it, the more it sounds right that what live photo is doing is it's actually capturing what's called JPEG video.
Yeah.
And then wrapping it in its own wrapper.
Yep.
And so JPEG video then is a series of stills that are strung together in a special way.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it is from what I remember. Right. You know, it's like a package container. It's just a bunch of JPEGs in a wrapper. A video JPEG in a wrapper.
Yeah.
So hopefully at some point they'll give you the ability to like flip through those individual images and pull out like good ones, almost like you would with a burst photo, which would be cool.
Yes.
But, you know, it's okay. Like I said, for me, it's sort of just become, hey, it's this cool thing. And when I show it to people, it definitely sells phones. You know, I always say Apple always likes to put out the feature that's going to sell more iPhones. And without a doubt, people see live photos and I go, oh, that's cool. I want an iPhone. You know, in the same way like a photo booth was for years on the Mac, right? That was the thing you'd pull up to show people in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, oh, check this out. It's a built-in app. And they'd take a bunch of, you know, silly photos like they're in a photo booth at the carnival. They're like, oh, that's really cool. And then you never use it again. And then you get the Mac and you use the Mac for all the other cool things that a Mac is cool for. Right? So it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a negative thing. I'm just saying it's one of those things that I don't know how many people use it that frequently or find it that beneficial. That's all. I'm just being honest about how I feel about live photos.
Cool.
And here we are on opposite sides of the live photo fight.
Yep.
Which is absolutely fascinating. People are probably looking, like pinching themselves to make sure they're not asleep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I haven't played with them, so I don't know.
Well, and I'll get emails. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
There's more than a dozen people emailing me right now to be like, dude, what are you talking about? You're an idiot. I use live photos all the time. It's the best thing since sliced bread.
And hopefully at least one of those people is also saying, and here's the app that lets you extract a single frame.
That would be nice. Yeah.
That'll happen too. I'm sure those apps exist. Like I said, you know, I think you can do it manually pretty easily on, you know, once you get it over to your Mac. So,
yeah, okay. I'm assuming you're right.
What do you think about Apple in a high resolution audio format?
No,
meh.
No,
me too.
First off, you can't hear the difference.
People, I'm pretty sure people just listen to music on YouTube these days.
People are. We just talked about Apple Music and Spotify. Everybody's just streaming music. So until they're streaming audio hi-fi, I guess.
That's what it seems like. That's what the plan is. That's what the rumor is from Maca Takara. They're developing higher quality audio streaming.
Streaming.
Yes. Well,
I mean, if there's not a huge cost to bandwidth and they can make stuff sound a little bit better, even if people can't hear it. Fine. I mean,
what they need to do is switch over and start streaming AAC instead. You know, so they have an essentially uncompressed file format.
Oh, you mean Apple Lossless?
Or excuse me. Thank you. Apple Lossless. When they do that, that's when people are going to hear the difference.
Yeah. You know, it seems to me that what they're probably trying to get to is something that will basically cost them nothing in terms of added bandwidth and or even maybe improve the bandwidth situation for them and the quality and the
that's called Apple Lossless.
No, not I mean the stream quality, as in the reliability of the audio coming across. So solve a lot of problems, and one added benefit is it sounds better.
It sounds better. I mean, I'm all for stuff sounding better if it can.
Yeah.
So. That's fine. So, I mean, if it's just a streaming thing and it's just something I get a benefit for basically free, and it's not going to impact my bandwidth in a huge way, I guess the problem would be is if it's the kind of thing where, it's going to double the amount of bandwidth that I'm using when I'm doing Apple Music, because I do a lot of Apple Music, and I have a feeling a lot of people do as well, in the, you know, streaming in the car over cellular instead of radio. Like, it is my radio stations. So, you know, I don't want to be suddenly eating through twice the amount of bandwidth for the same thing. And hopefully if they go that route, and that's the kind of case where the bandwidth doubles, it's an opt-in sort of scenario where I can flip a switch and say, yeah, I want the higher quality audio, or I don't.
Okay, which devices does Apple make that support that? And I'm not tossing that out there in like a jerk way. Seriously, which devices does Apple make that would support the 24-bit playback?
Currently?
Currently.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I know Apple, fourth-gen Apple TV does not.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that it's Max, and that's it. Unless you would, well, no, then it still wouldn't be the device. If you had, if the Lightning port supports audio out on, say, an iPhone, then you could put a DAC, a 24-bit DAC, in your headphones.
That's what the report is kind of leaning toward. Some kind of
and
something that would benefit
in
that way.
It's not supported natively on the device. Why would Apple do this?
It would have to then come out in conjunction. It would be a feature just like stuff on, I'm trying to think what's on the current S generations that's not on another iPhone device, and it's escaping me right now.
Honestly, but I would rather have Apple take the 24-bit recordings they have, make sure that they are encoded in the best possible way they can be for the 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz, and give us that, because most of us don't have headphones or speakers that are going to be able to reproduce anything that we can detect beyond that anyhow. So give me the best possible encoding of that 24-bit file as a 16-bit version, and let's run with that. Smaller file sizes, the best audio we're going to be able to hear anyhow, or detect, really. And our file sizes aren't going to be bigger, and call it good.
Now you got me curious, because I think, haven't most iPhones and iPods been able to support Apple lossless for a while? And isn't Apple lossless a 24-bit?
Apple lossless
format?
That's a really good question. I didn't think it was.
What does
I could be wrong?
Let me pause this for the average listener here. What the heck does 24-bit mean for me?
Okay, so here's the way the recordings are done. So when you go into the studio and record digitally, you record at as high a bit rate as you possibly can. So that's oftentimes it's like the 24-bit. And then when you mix it down for the final product that goes over the air or onto a service that's going to stream it or sell it to you online, you're actually encoding it down to 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz, which is what a CD is.
Now, what do those numbers mean to the quality, though?
Well, if you're at the 24-bit level, from what I understand, unless you are like in a professional studio recording environment, those numbers really don't mean anything, because you can't hear what's there. It's just the extra data to work with.
So it's really the bit rate is the...
Yeah, the bit rate is how quickly does the sampling happen.
Well, I think the size of the bit, so like 24-bit is probably refers to the range of frequencies.
Right. So how much data is being captured and how quickly are you gathering it?
Yeah, okay.
And so it makes sense to say the more you get, the better off you are. And that's true. It's like taking a raw photo. The more data you can collect, the better off you are. But it doesn't mean that all the data that's in that raw image, or in this case, the really massive audio file you're collecting, is data that in the end you're going to be able to use.
Yeah.
But you don't want to throw away anything that's potentially good. So you get everything, and then when you edit your file and then process it out for the final product, then it gets scaled down to the really good thing that everyone gets to listen to, and their speakers and their amplifier and everything else they have can't process any more than that anyhow.
Yeah.
So I just pulled this up just to confirm what I had thought, because something I always pictured about when you talk about the bit levels is I always think about taking a waveform, right? And imagine you're drawing the waveform as an analog line, right? Up and down, you know, a mm-hmm. curve, like the yep. waveform, you know, and you're going to convert it into a digital image. So sort of almost like taking a line vector drawing and distilling it down into a bitmap, and you're going to get those sort of stair step levels, right? And that's determined by the resolution. So the audio bit rate is almost like the audio resolution of that waveform.
Okay.
Right. So at 16 bit, you're going to have a certain kind of stair stepping, and the higher resolution that you get up to, you're going to have more of that. And I think that's not quite what it is. But then as I was doing the research, Tested has a good article on 16-bit versus 24-bit audio, and they have just this one sentence that this is how they describe it. I'm just going to read it verbatim. So again, this is from tested.com. It says, the easiest way to envision this is a series of levels that audio energy can be sliced at any given moment in time. With 16-bit audio, there are 65,536 possible levels. With every bit of greater resolution, the number of levels doubles. By the time we get to 24-bit, we actually have 16,777,216 levels. So, you know, it's almost like resolution
yeah.
of an image, you know. So same thing with camera sensors and all these other things, right? It's just more digital bits.
And perhaps the
same amount of,
you could say,
you know,
the
time or levels.
The huh? frequency may be something akin to frame rate in a video.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Now, Dave Hamilton put together a really awesome explanation about why anything above 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz isn't that big of a deal for us. And so, Michael, I will make sure you have the link for that.
Cool.
But it's a really great explanation of just the whole thing. And it's done in a way that the average person can read it. You don't have to be some audio high-end technophile PhD thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many factors that go into the sound that's actually going to wind up in your ear anyway.
Yeah, you're listening right. to ear pods.
Because you have
already,
the digital
so.
Audio processor. You have, you know, what kind of headphones do you have? You have what the source material is that's being sent out. So this only solves one little bit of the whole
yep.
chain, right? So yeah, they can send out higher bit rate audio, but if you're on cruddy headphones with a bad digital, you know, today analog processor,
does I'm it sure even that's matter? That's probably part of the whole thing they're trying to think about. So
as Jeff was pointing out, so it probably it's if they do it to really get taken advantage of, they're going to have to probably put out new hardware and new headphones, which, interestingly enough, are all three things that Apple has control over, right?
And there's also rumors That's that we're true. Going to be seeing, you know, a change to the audio port and all this stuff anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, Apple could match a new audio format coming over Apple Music with new hardware, with a new, you know, processor, with new headphones from Beats. Right?
You know,
and they can say, look, if you get this package end-to-end, you're going to have better quality audio.
That sounds like Apple.
And that does make sense, because the standard headphone jack that's on every device today cannot give you that 24-bit audio.
No, because it's analog.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if they can go pure digital out the Lightning connector, gets interesting.
It does get interesting, but you know, I still think that giving us the 24-bit files ultimately is not going to give us anything better than what we have today. It's all really about how you process the original file for output.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but I mean, we can't ignore the marketing side of this stuff too, right?
That's a good point. Yes.
You know, people still buy cameras based on the number of megapixels, even though we all know that doesn't matter. And there's still going to be people that are going to buy into a music service or headphones or something because the numbers are bigger and because the marketing people say this is better because this is 24-bit and your other thing has 16-bit.
Yeah, and that's what Pono was going for.
Yeah.
And Pono. And people thought they were hearing better audio, but if you did a blind test, they could not pick out the better audio.
Yeah, but it sometimes doesn't matter. If it helps sell more devices, you know, I think it's in Apple's interest to go for it.
Mm-hmm. All right, last thing. Did you guys see the photos of the Apple Museum in Prague?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool. So it's featuring the largest private collection of Apple products. And I guess one of the coolest things I have. They have it looks like one of those Think Different posters where you have the five iMacs, the colored iMacs arranged in a circle. Mm-hmm. But it's the actual iMacs, like mounted on a wall sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's really cool. They've got, you know, original Apple computers, the whole line of iMacs, the whole line of iPods, iPhones. I really like the sort of pictograph layout that they
made. Yeah, they have them laid out almost in like a infographic.
Chronological. Yeah.
With the timeline going up. So from model to model, both for the iPod and for the iPhone. Which is really neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, there's a whole Imgur. Did you say Imgur? Imgur? I don't know. However you say that, there's a whole gallery that you can check out with, you know, if you can't get to Prague.
Yeah, well, which is probably a lot of people.
Probably, yeah. Okay, so with that, I might end up going to go see Star Wars tonight. At 8:30.
Oh, awesome.
Maybe. We'll see if we get done fast enough and, you know, that sort of thing. So let's do our picks. Jeff, I'll let you go first.
Okay. My pick, this is not a new product, but holy crap, is it useful. And I was reminded just how useful over this past weekend because I took off for Steamboat to spend time with my family. And it's the Skosh retractable USB to lightning cable.
Oh, cool. I need one of those.
Oh, man, is it awesome. So, you know, it's in the center, it has a little spring-loaded disc thing in a frame. And so you pull the ends to extend it out. And when it's time to retract it, you pull them again. So it kind of snaps and releases. And then it coils back up into this small little thing. So no tangled wires. You don't have to wind it up yourself. And it's really nice. And what I found is that you can actually pick these up off Amazon now for like $14-15.
What are they called?
It's the Skosh retractable sync cable for lightning devices.
Okay. I'm seeing a Smart Strike.
I think that's it, like Strike Line or something.
Yeah, it's a Smart Strike Pro.
There we go. I just found you a link.
Okay, cool. And it's on Amazon. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Okay. I might need to get that.
Yeah, they're really nice.
I have to get a white one if I want Prime.
Yeah, you can get them in black or white. I forgot.
Okay, cool. That will be in the show notes. And
I think it's cheaper if you go white also.
Yeah, 13 something?
Yeah.
$14. Check it out. Adam, what is your pick?
My pick is a game. I think this has been out for a while. It was awarded Apple's Best of 2015 award. And so right now I think it's 66% off. I believe it's 99 cents is what I picked it up for today. But it is a puzzle style game called Agent A by Yak & Co. And so the idea is you're a secret agent spy, Agent A, and you are chasing down Ruby LaRouge, and you have to go solve little puzzles. It's kind of like, you know, if you like games like Myst or The Room or those sorts of things, this is a more, you know, lighter, casual version of that, but it's the same kind of concept, right? You go in, you look at objects in a space, you try and find clues and hints, you try to unlock saves and get through different puzzles and find keys to unlock more clues. And the clues all build on top of each other. And, you know, the storyline is you're chasing down this agent who works for the evil henchman. You know, so it's kind of got the James Bond spy kind of theme going for it. Really cool.
Yes, that whole mod feel. It's awesome.
Yeah, really cool art style to it. So it's very stylized. And I had seen it for a while and been meaning to buy it. And I'm mostly picking it because it's universal and also available for the Apple TV. So actually, over the holidays, we played it on the Apple TV. Not a ton of gameplay. It didn't take us very long. If you're really good at puzzle games, it's not super challenging, I will say. I don't know if it's a little bit different on the Apple TV versus the iPad or the iPhone, because I didn't play it on that.
Yeah.
On the Apple TV, they kind of give you the points. They show you the points where you can sort of click. I'm not sure if that's something that's also featured in the iOS versions. If it is, that makes it a little bit easier than some of the other games that I've played in the past. But overall, very enjoyable. I like the art style, and it's definitely got enough gameplay to be worth 99 cents if you're into this kind of title. And it was kind of fun to do on the Apple TV. My daughter and I did it together, and so we were passing the remote back and forth, and it was fun.
Cool.
So, Agent A, a puzzle in disguise.
All right. So my pick, I feel like I've done it before, but it's worth picking again. It's To Do Movies, all one word, To Do Movies 4. It's free. And so it's kind of self-explanatory. It's like a to-do list for movies, which I always love having, especially at the theater. Because, you know, you see all the trailers and you think, oh, I want to see that. I want to see that. And this thing just is a dedicated list of movies that you want to see and have seen. And you can actually make your own list. So you can have to watch and watched. You can have favorites. You can do all kinds of things. So it's basically like a movie database that's tailored for doing, keeping track of which movies you want to see. But I can imagine you can do a lot of really fun things with this. In addition to that, with just creating custom lists of movies. And I believe you can. Can you share these? I wonder if you can.
Well, I hope you can.
Crap, I don't think you can.
Well, that's a great update opportunity.
Well,
you did pick it, by the way. Now I just found it.
Oh, yeah.
186.
186. Well, whatever. I'm picking it again. And I did see... It's funny. I saw Krampus.
What?
Krampus? Krampus?
I don't know what that is.
I saw the trailer for that, and that just looks like a silly, fun movie.
It is fun.
Heavy on the silly.
It is. It's like a black comedy sort of thing. But yeah, to-do movies. I love it for keeping track of to-dos, movies I want to see, so...
Honestly, I thought you were going to pick The Martian, which is out on iTunes now.
It is.
Oh, well, I think I'm about to spend money.
It is an awesome movie.
I think I might just wait to get it on Blu-ray. But yeah.
Yeah. You have not seen that movie. I've now watched it, I think, 3 times since picking it up.
I don't want to ruin it. You've watched it 3 times? That's crazy.
Well, yeah, because I watched it again to see if it would be appropriate for my kids. And then I let my kids watch it. And it's now my oldest daughter's favorite movie.
Oh, cool.
And then my wife hadn't seen it. So we watched it again with her. And nice. She loved it as well. So it's a winner in our household.
Awesome. Have you read the book?
I have not read the book yet.
Go read the book. Thing.
The book is great. Yeah,
the book is wonderful.
Yep.
I love the movie, and you can get it on iTunes. So,
was it $15?
There's good deals. There is really good deals on iTunes right now. By the way, I don't know how long they're going to last, but if you're into movies at all, you should like check out the bundles and stuff like that. I'm still this close to pulling the trigger on the James Bond bundle. It's like 22 movies for $100.
Oh, geez.
Every James Bond film to date.
Wait, how much?
$99 for all of them.
Okay, I thought I misunderstood you.
For all the James Bond movies?
All of them.
Well, I guess $99 seems like
including all the recent
price.
Daniel Craig ones.
And does it include like a forward thing too, where you get all the new ones that get made?
No.
No. Darn. Okay.
It's still a killer deal.
That is a pretty good deal, yeah.
You get all the classics, all the new ones. You have to suffer through the the Remington Steel ones. Right?
And those should have been so good. Oh, man, they should have been good.
Timothy Dalton, is that right?
Yeah, talk about screwing over Timothy Dalton.
I remember not.
I actually like those. They're not that
I remember bad. Vaguely enjoying those.
No, they're kind of bad.
They are kind of bad. No, I'm thinking about
only in perspective.
I remember them being kind of bad when I watched them.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
It's been a while since I've seen them, so I should probably be careful. Yeah. If you want to really get, if you're a child of the 80s and you want to get really messed up, watch The Black Hole, Disney's The Black Hole.
Oh, yeah. Man,
I rented that recently and watched it because I remembered being a kid and seeing it and loving it. And I watched it again as an adult. It was probably like 3 months ago. And I'm like, what was I thinking?
I know. It's a total train wreck.
Oh, man. Yeah, from the opening credits to the end credits, it is a textbook perfect example of how to do everything wrong in a movie.
I have to talk to some people who do this sort of thing, but I need to find out if you took acid and watched it, something would work.
Maybe, yeah.
It's got a whole Dante's Inferno theme thing going on in it that I didn't catch when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That whole feeling is totally there. And, oh man, yeah. But what a disaster.
Okay.
So anyway, but there is some like killer deals, movie bundles and all that stuff. Like I think you can get all Harry Potter's for $60 and
oh, that's a good deal.
They also have all seven of the Fast and the Furious movies, which I haven't seen, but everybody I've ever brought it up with says they're actually good.
That's what I always hear. Maybe it's just a bunch of people who hear that from other people, and
we're
all saying a giant lie. That one guy said.
Hey, you can get the whole Die Hard collection for $25.
Yeah. Crazy.
All right. Well, check out the deals.
Yeah. So another bonus pick.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get out of here so Michael can go see Star Wars.
Yeah, I might finally see it tonight. Let's see. Okay, so you can find the iPhone picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes and tell a friend. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your questions, comments, and feedback. Our sponsor this week, of course, the Yamaha AG03 and AG06 series of personal USB audio mixers. Check them out at usa.yamaha.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for making accommodations for tonight, Adam.
Oh, hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, TMO Daily Observations Podcast, and at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And thank you for braving the harsh weather to get here, Jeff.
And thank you for being so accommodating of my messed up schedule when it turns out that my car was actually literally frozen.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for being here. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, see you next time on the iOS show. Boop, boop.
Boop.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
And an internet
community.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we gonna do?
What are we gonna do?
Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? They have to get them.